Well, I unfortunately made my slideshow in widescreen, and we don't have that, so everything's kind of squished, but we'll make it. Well, this morning, I'd like to let you know, that's a little much, okay, that I envy all of you that don't have Facebook and don't use it. I have to for work, and my generation's got to know what my kids are doing. So, unfortunately, I have a lot of friends from my past that are, we'll call them atheists, doubters, unbelievers. And every time I go on Facebook, there are things that make me wonder and question how this world is even alive right now. How God is growing in this place when so many seem to just brush him aside. So I'm going to talk a little bit this morning about how they try to do that. Ooh, Dave. I got to move that out. Is that better? All right. I'm going to make a case for the maker this morning. We all know the conflict, make, you know, creation, evolution, everything coming from a puddle. Yeah. Okay, well, got a little something to say about that. In Romans 1:20, it says, For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Now, think about that while we're going through this sermon today. I did my notes a little different, so I can try to keep up with the little flicky thing. I've never been very successful with that, so, you know, give me some leeway. In 1970, a man named Frederick Hoyle, an atheist, a scientist, a evolutionist, decided, you know what? I'm going to prove to people that God didn't create life on Earth, that it was put together in a puddle of goo on an unformed planet, spontaneously came to life, crawled out, and became everything you see that walks and breathes today. In his effort to prove this to the world, he computed the probability that life, with all its available components, the primordial soup as they call it, what are the chances that this actually happened? Because he wanted a low number to show, yeah, this could happen anywhere, anyway. When he got done, he came up with 1 out of 10 to the 40,000th power. He did that number is a little high for him. It made him think harder. And these are just the odds of forming the proteins that are needed to create life in its simplest form. These are just the building blocks. To create the building blocks to make life. You have a better chance of winning the lottery every week of your life for the next 80 years. Every week. 80 years. Than this happening on its own. Or, as another put it, it's the same probability as a tornado tearing through a scrapyard and assembling a 747 jet on its own that fully functions. Think about that for a minute. That is pretty hard to imagine that would ever happen. Yet, evolutionists want to tell us that's how it did. This man who calculated all this is now a creationist, found God, and now proclaims him as a scientific creationist. God's good. When we dig for a weapon to fight against him, he makes us fools. And we can't do anything but say, you know what, I was wrong. But you know what's funny? It's like I said, those odds were just for making the proteins. Another gentleman following him, named Harold Marowitz. The names really aren't important, just want to give credit where credit's due. Recalculated this to find out, okay, now that those proteins are made, what are the chances they would form together to form DNA, RNA, and even the cell wall in a living organism to hold everything together? 1 in 10 times 100 billion. I can't even think of anything, and neither has anybody else that I could find, to equate to this. No tornadoes could possibly do this. I guess if we go back to the lottery example, that would be your entire family winning the lottery every week for the next 1,000 years. I think this guy put the nail in the coffin, at least for me. I can't say that 100 billion times did life try to form on this planet and finally made it once. And and this doesn't include also the fact that if life did form on this planet out of its own accord in a hostile environment, what are the chances that the puddle dries up? That a rock falls, squishes whatever it was? It's astronomical. So I tell you, here's a little bit of ammunition for those people that talk about how creationism is flawed. Sure, the Bible tells us that God created man, created the animals, created the earth. He never goes through how, why, or with what. So who are we to say that we know how he did it and with what means? Well, after he did create man, obviously we were his greatest creation. Genesis 2:17 tells us about man and the tree of knowledge. It says, "But you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. For when you eat from it, you will certainly die." Now, right from the bat there, God says, don't go after knowledge. Don't do it. If you do it, you're going to die. I mean, of course, man fell because of disobedience to God. That's one thing. But what would prompt God to tell us that in the beginning? What was so dangerous about knowledge of good and evil? Some would think, sure, I know good and evil, I can do on the good side. The problem is, we wouldn't. We don't. And it didn't happen. Obviously, we were all kicked out, and we know the story. But I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about something from the Torah. We know the Jewish book of the law. Now, most of that's not included in our Bible. But at the same time, Jesus grew up with these stories. He knew them. All the people knew them. So he had no need to re-mention them all. And when our Bible was formed, we were given what was best for us at that time and going forward. But the Torah has a book called the Book of Enoch. Now, if any of you remember Enoch, he was the one who walked with the Lord and was taken from this earth because he walked with the Lord rightly. Same guy. All right. Okay, the Book of Enoch in the Torah tells us about a group of angels that were sent down to earth to teach and administer to men, to teach us the ways of God, the ways of living, the right things to do. Now, they call them the watchers because that's what they were supposed to do, watch over us. Now, these angels were the ones who found women attractive and took them as their wives, progenerating the giants that we hear of in the Bible. It's mentioned in our Bible a couple times throughout the Old Testament, but never really clearly. These are one of the things I think about when I read the Bible. I go, okay, well, where did these guys come from? So I have to read outside. The Torah seemed like it was pretty safe, as Jesus was Jewish, and this was Jewish tradition and the stories he grew up on. Now, part of their... I keep doing that. I can't help it. It's part of my personality. But part of what they did when they fell, these angels, the watchers, aside from taking humans as their wives, was they began to teach people, their children, the giants and beasts and mighty men of the old, as they are called, began to teach them the secrets. It's called forbidden knowledge, as they refer to it, knowledge that is forbidden, the cutting of roots and all this stuff that we today could equate to medicine and, you know, how to create weapons and things of this nature. They brought it to us against God's will and taught it to his people. Bad move. Because knowledge, apparently, was really forbidden up to this point. Why? Because he wanted us to remain in the dark? Yes and no. Yes and no. Because God knew that knowledge we weren't ready for breeds doubt and separates us from him. And what it eventually led to is him causing the flood of Noah and wiping this wickedness out of the world because people separated themselves from God because they thought they knew better than he did. A world full of wickedness from a little bit of knowledge. Sounds familiar. Sounds like today. Sounds like Facebook. All my atheist friends like to post their little deals from wherever they seem to dig them up about how this was discovered and, you know, this disproves God. And it's disconcerting. It's troubling to me. I'm not going to stop being friends with them because they don't believe. But I'm not going to hide from them because I don't know what to tell them. And I don't think we're supposed to. So the question comes up, is knowledge evil in the eyes of God? Is this something we should avoid? Should we abandon our pursuit of knowledge as human beings? It's part of what we think of as our personalities, where we have to find out. I need to know. It's probably part of my personality a little too much. Tear things apart to find out how they work. See if I can put them back together most of the time. I can do that. Pretty good. Sometimes they never go back together, right? But do we bury our heads in the sand and pretend it's not there while the world uses this evidence that they've found to talk other people away from following God? It doesn't sound like the right thing to do. It sounds like the coward's way out. We think about, that's not right. And then we read a little bit further. Oh, I'm stuck here. What's going on? Next slide, please. All right. We'll read a little bit more in the Bible in Hosea 4:6. God says, "My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also reject you as my priests." Okay, so God tells us you're not allowed to have knowledge. This knowledge is not yours. But then he's going to tell us, I'm not happy with you because you don't have any? Confused? I sure am, or at least I was. I probably will be till the rest of my life until God comes and, you know, all knowledge is given us, and then I won't have any more questions, but for now. All right, so if knowledge is so important, and there are many other examples in the Bible of where he admonishes us to find knowledge, I just didn't put them all in my sermon. I could sit here all day. So if he works so hard to keep us from it, why are we admonished not to seek it? Well, the problem is, tells us in 1 Corinthians 8:1, we know that we all possess knowledge, but knowledge puffs up while love builds up. See, many of us, and I'm going to say us, I'm going to say the ungodly, seek knowledge as a means to disprove in the existence and the sovereignty of God. They look for weapons to use against him and his kingdom. They seek knowledge as a way to disprove him. And so, isn't that what happens? Once we discover something and we can't explain it, what do we do? What do we do? But what this breeds us, the more we learn, worked, the more we build up pride. In Isaiah 47:10, back to the Bible, you have trusted in your wickedness and have said, no one sees me. Your wisdom and your knowledge mislead you when you say to yourself, I am, and there is none besides me. What he's saying there is, the more you know, the more you feel yourself an island above and beyond whatever else is there. Knowledge either eventually leads you to draw closer to God or drives a wedge and separates you further from him. It's what's in your heart that tells you what to do with that knowledge and how to perceive it. It severs what we perceive as our need for God when we can see what it's made of and try on our own power to create like God did. We see it now. DNA, ooh. Sure, God used DNA to create us and everything else. If you had a great way of making stuff, why would you change? It makes total sense. But yet they try to say, you know, we're all related and made of the same things. I'm like, well, yeah, no kidding. If I was building something out of Legos, and that's what I had to build stuff out of, why would I go invent something else to make this over here? I'm going to use the same parts. It's common sense, but they try to ignore that and use their facts to drive us to their side of the argument. The problem is, the more we know, the more we think we can control it. We can edit genes, we can splice DNA, we can do all these things now. And we've all, I don't know if we've all heard of CRISPR, but the gene editing equipment that they've developed has just brought us another step closer to not needing God in people's eyes. And it's a folly. Because at the end, you can make all the DNA you want, but you can't give it life. All you can do is take that DNA, insert it into something that already has life, and it grows from that life that was created by God himself. It's an illusion. But they think they have power over life itself. If they want to try to figure it out, tell them to put that primordial ooze in a bucket, see how long it takes. They won't live to see it, and neither will any of us. See, people want to know how. They don't ask why. The Bible calls us little gods. Does that mean we have the same abilities and blessings and powers of God? Sure, we've seen us do it. We've created things. We've done things that people back in the time would never have imagined. Would have blown their minds. But we don't ask, why is it this way? Why was it done? See, that's the difference between a Christian seeking knowledge and the world seeking knowledge. They seek to disprove God. We seek to prove God. So even in the smallest things, God is there. I mean, man has a hard time accepting something they can't see and hold and feel. Yeah, I can sympathize with that. That was a big struggle when I found God. I couldn't find him, couldn't see him, couldn't touch him, couldn't smell him. It's a struggle everybody I know has had. The thing is, he's there and I can't prove it. I can prove it in the things that happen and the work he's done, but I can't walk you up to him and say, hey, shake his hand. There he is. And this people of this world, they don't cotton well to that. They've been lied to so many times by people and their words. People that talk about what they don't understand. People that try to tell you something, but it turns out to be a lie or a trap or a wicked scheme against them. We're jilted. So when we approach someone who doesn't believe in God, and the Spirit hasn't moved in them to push them in that direction, they think we're just going to lie to them like everybody else has. They expect it. Why would I trust these people that can't prove and show me their God when everybody else who's promised me something has lied to me? They're defensive. And it's a sad place that we're in today, where you have to reach complete rock bottom before you'll even consider the existence of God, because the opposition is so high everywhere you look. I once had a friend on Facebook again who posted, "I can't believe in a God who won't let you eat bacon." Now, I found that funny at first, but at the same time, I was compelled to reply to his posting and say, God never said you can't eat bacon. He said the Israelites could not eat pork as an unclean animal. And I told him where, how, why all of this was said and where his thinking was skewed. He had no reply. But what it did do is it triggered his sister to chime up, who was a Christian. And she came back in supporting what I was trying to explain to him in a nice way. I'm not a troll. I'm not a Jesus troll, okay? Because that's going to turn anybody off right now. So I tried to do it kindly and with love. I still don't think he's a Christian, but I think God got himself a good primer that day. Talk to his heart a little bit. Let him know that we're not all Bible thumping, you're going to go to hell types of people, which is what we need to do, because a lot of people think that. They hear the word Christian and they think we're going to go up there and just pick at their everything. Some of us do, unfortunately. It's not fair. It's not the will of God. I can guarantee you that. It's not our job to judge. It's our job to love, even if they are sinners. Nothing's going to change a sinner's heart that we do, but love them and show them a better way. There, I did it again. So the question is, are we afraid? Do we reject evidence, science, proposed knowledge because we don't know the answer from God's side? Somebody comes up to you and goes, where's the dinosaurs come in? Do we bury our heads in the sand like an ostrich because we can't really tell them? There are theories out there. There are theories, admittedly, and the Alliance doesn't hold with a lot of these things, so I'm not going to go into what those are and whether or not they are legitimate or not. The fact is, we are afraid. As Christians, we hide from our enemy in this world, and we brand our enemy as the non-Christians that we live with every day of our lives. We give them the upper hand because we're too afraid. It challenges our own faith. When we can't reconcile something in our own minds, it makes us question with whether what we believe is true. That's human nature. It's just the way we are. We've questioned since the beginning of time. That's why Eve ate the apple. The serpent came to her and tempted her. But in her head, what was happening? He didn't possess her. He didn't force her to do it. He sowed doubt. He said, well, what's wrong with this? Go ahead and do it. We don't have the answer. We don't know the answer. The thing is, it's like playing Trivial Pursuit. When you don't know the answer to any questions, what would you do? You're tempted to quit playing that game because I don't know any of it. So I'm going to quit and go over here. Well, this person over here chortles to themselves and feels lifted up and encouraged because they've beaten you. They've beaten God. I won't stand for that. I won't stand there and let someone who wants to bring my God down and trample on him by running away because I don't know. Now, there's that pride thing again. What do you have to do? You have to admit, hey, I don't know the answers to that. It's a really good question, maybe. Maybe it's a dumb question, and I do know the answer, and I can answer you. It's one or the other. But the fact is, sometimes we have to admit we just don't know. Yeah, I already said that. It challenges our faith. There we are. I went too far. Jeez, I can't even do it, and it's on top of each page. Oh, that's what happens when the Spirit starts talking through you about things, and I get excited. I just throw everything out. So what do? Well, a lot of Christians don't want to hear about it. Like I said, I envy you guys that aren't on Facebook because you're not challenged as much by those people. But once the question's in your mind, what do? Do you sit there and question yourself and doubt and worry and think that maybe you're doing the wrong thing? What if God doesn't exist? What if this is never true or whatever? That's what the enemy wants you to do. That's why God has forbidden the knowledge to these people from the beginning. Is the fact we question ourselves and we question God. And what do? When people ask us a question, say, why is it this way? We go, because it wasn't in here. What do they say to that? Well, I don't believe in that in the first place. So I just gave them a very poor answer. Can I show them where it is in here? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't think this Bible talks about genetics and DNA splicing and dinosaurs and what have you. It's an uncomfortable truth that I had to admit to myself is I don't think God's knowledge can be contained in an average of 1,200 pages. And I don't think he believes that either. This is a guide for us. I believe every single word. I believe it teaches us everything we need to know as a Christian to go through our lives in the correct manner. But if this is all we believe God is, are we limiting him? Are we telling people that he is contained in this book? And if they read this book and don't find their answers, does it make us a liar? I'm just asking you to expand your minds a little bit. In Psalms 78:40-41, it says, how often they provoked him in the wilderness and grieved him in the desert. Yes, again and again they tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel. Man can limit God. When we work against him, he can only do so much to us, for us. He could wipe us out, but he's chosen to give us free will. So what we do affects how he acts. It's a folly to lean on your own understanding. When presented with an argument that we don't know the answers to. Don't put God in a box, because he's given us more than just the Bible to rely on. When Jesus left us, he gave us the Spirit of Truth. The Spirit of Truth, it's the Encyclopedia Britannica of God. All knowledge contained therein, straight from the mouth of God. If you have a question that sows doubt in your mind, or a question that causes another to doubt, the Spirit of God will give you the answer. John 16:13 tells us, but when he, the Spirit of Truth, truth is a good word. You can't deny truth. He will guide you into all the truth. He will not speak of his own. He will speak only what he hears. And what he hears is from the mouth of God. And he will tell you what yet is to come. See, God knows what we were headed for because it happened before. He washed away the world because of it. Knowledge without God, which drives us further from God over and over again. So when somebody brings up a question that makes you doubt your faith, makes you question where you are, instead of feeling separated from God, go to him. Ask him to explain it. Show me the truth. Show me the answer. James 1:5 says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should go ask God. Right there, he tells you straight up. Who gives generously to all without finding fault? He's not going to look at you and go, what's wrong with you? I can't believe you even consider believing that. No. He says, you came and asked. That's what you're supposed to do. Just like a kid with his parents. My kid has asked me some pretty interesting questions. I can't yell at him. He doesn't know. We don't know any better. All we know is what we've been told. But we do know that we believe God. And we go to him for answers because he does know. It's showing our obedience and our faith in him. And he says, keep learning. Keep exploring. Keep finding the answers. The more you know. Proverbs 18:15, the heart of discerning acquires knowledge, for the ears of the wise seek it out. How many times in the Bible does God admonish us to be wise? Encourages us. Well, if he wants us to be wise, what do we have to do? We have to learn. We have to be open to new ideas so that we can find the answers to them. And I can walk up to people who sneer at me while I pray over my dinner at the mall and say, you believe in God? What about this? And I can look at them and say, this is what I believe. This is what God has showed me because I've already asked. I'm not afraid to ask God for the truth and guidance. It doesn't always answer in the way I like. Sometimes he leads you in a direction where you get a little bit of a hint, and you can explore that on your own. And then the Spirit will lead you where it goes. Down the rabbit hole, they call it on the internet. Don't do that. Don't follow the rabbit hole on the internet. You'll go to places you'll never want to see again in your life. But the rabbit hole of God is amazing, kind of like Wonderland. Except for the caterpillar thing. That was creepy. But keep going. Keep learning. Don't be afraid of what these people say. Say to them, maybe I don't know. But God is my side. I will find out. And I will have a response. And I will know what to say to you. But love them above all else. Don't hide from them. Don't tell them they're wrong and beat them with the Bible. Just because you don't have the answer doesn't mean you have to hate on them. People are people. It's in our nature to question. It's what knowledge does to us when we don't have God. It makes us want to be in control. And nobody wants to be in control with somebody in control of them. Don't blame them. Just arm yourselves with knowledge, with the truth, so that when it comes to face you, you can fight the battle. And do it with open arms. Because in the end, as I told you before, all the men who've generated these statistics and these equations, I couldn't put it in my slideshow because it was about 14 pages long. They assembled a document of all the names of the PhD'd, doctorated scientists who claimed atheism. And through their research, forced to admit that their previous beliefs were wrong, that the evidence did not support their theories. Undeniable proof that the hand of the Creator was required to make sense of this mess. So go outside, read a book, talk to people. Don't be afraid to say you don't know. That may make them happy for a while, but the fact is it's just them bringing up a question that they don't have an answer to. Our job is to find the answer for them, to share our knowledge and our love with them, and be Christians and love above all else the Great Commission. Thank you for listening to me ramble on. Have a great day. Watch a science channel, something, I don't know. But as you go out today, Lord, I pray that you're with us and that when we are confronted by the weapons of this world, the weapons of words, the weapons of aggression, the weapons of evidence, that we can come and show them where you fit, where your hand was required, and where you are behind every single equation that man dreams up, that without the hand of God, we are nothing and would never have been. Watch us as we go out, so that we are safe, so that when we are confronted, we can use our tongues but speak your words. We thank you that we are here and we have learned to believe that the evidence of this world presents to us does not destroy us, simply makes us stronger. Thank you, Father. Blessed be your name. Amen.